La la la, Yahweh, hey hey hey, yeah, hey, 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 oh, 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 ay, ay,
Empowered Health, a podcast shedding light on how healing is an inside job. Keys to your inner power and total transformation. Discussing wholeness, wellness, and the effects of the mind on the physical and energetic parts of our being. A podcast to support you, moving from fear and pain into wellness and purpose. Belief, hope, connection, energetic keystones for transformation and inner power. Sacred knowledge that inspires us to look within, to find our own unique path. Empowered health, release and rewire to become what you truly are, strong, whole, and empowered.
Hi everyone, this is Jane and Shell from Empowered Health. Welcome Shaman Sarah Ritchie. Shaman Sarah started her apprentice as a shiatsu practitioner 25 years ago. She is also an RMT, a TCM acupuncturist. Her real work lies now as an energy worker, a Reiki master, a shaman, and an intuitive coach. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, Sarah. Can you just explain your passion, your love that we're going to get into quite deeply? What is shamanism?
Sure. I know it's one of those things you hear it. Shamanism is talked about a lot more these days. And a lot of people say, I don't really know what that is. It sounds like some hocus pocus. Actually, shamanism is healing that came from many different indigenous traditions. And the healers in those communities were, and the communities themselves were living very close to nature. So the healing practices came out of reflecting their perception of the world through their responses to nature. And so that became sort of the language and the philosophy of the healing. The shaman basically acts as a facilitator to allow, to help to recognize maybe where blockages might exist. And to help facilitate the movement or change of energetic systems so that the person can heal. It's really quite fascinating.
And a lot of people are, you know, into technology, our phones, Netflix. We're a little bit, or especially teenagers, are drifting away from this connection to the earth. And why do you find it so important to heal?
Absolutely. So everything in the universe has a vibration. Everything has an energy or chi, if you will, and it's all connected. So when we are on our technology, they all vibrate at a higher, less natural frequency. I don't actually know what that frequency is. Someone else has studied that, but it pulls us away from our groundedness. So the phenomena of people going, you know, not being able to take a spare moment at all away from their phone, you know, someone leaves the room, I'll be back in 2 minutes, and they come back and the person's already on the phone looking at things. It disables us from our ability to hear our own inner voice, to hear our soul speaking, to take a moment of peacefulness between one activity and the next. The idea of, you know, when we meditate, we talk about our in-breath and then pausing before our exhalation. So bringing us into the present moment. And so that earth connection is really, really important for us.
Yeah, and the connection to the earth.
Absolutely.
I've done a lot of grounding like just connecting to the earth, what is similar in shamanism?
Oh, for sure. So, you know, I don't want to generalize because, of course, there are many different shamanic traditions. So Celtic, for example, Polynesian, the tradition actually that Shelley and I studied a little bit more on this year is the Peruvian shamanism. And I myself am an indigenous person from Canada of the Métis origin. And although I wasn't raised with that because I was adopted, that idea of getting connected to the earth was really important. So for example, smudging is a tradition of cleansing and clearing our energies using, you know, for example, sage, or putting down prayer tobacco when we're setting an intention. These are objects or natural objects from the environment that carry an energy with them. So when we smudge with sage, people say, what am I actually doing? Why do they call that a medicine? It's because that ethereal energy of the smoke brings in the ability for us to work with the energies of the universe around us, or if you will, spirit. Mm-hmm. So allowing ourselves to utilize those natural objects like stones or rattles or even a drum for a heartbeat rhythm to bring us back to the grounded nature of who we are as human beings and connect ourselves to the earth.
Right. So often when someone gets sick, they're disconnected from this natural vibration that we're all part of. Could you explain a little bit about how we get sick and how to reconnect?
Absolutely. I would say that when we experience trauma in our lives, when we experience a strong trauma, we have to have the ability to discover, or in a way, in the Peruvian tradition, they would say to track, like we're like the jaguar, we're tracking that illness or that issue to find out where the root and the core of it is. Yeah. And so in that tradition, we believe that we have a luminous body or field around us, and that luminous field or our aura carries various energies. And it can carry the energy or the imprints of positive experiences, but also will contain the imprints of experiences that were more traumatic. So when we want to find out how to clear an issue, maybe you've gone to therapy for 20 years for cognitive behavior therapy to work through that thing you keep cycling back through, and you say, oh, I really thought I fixed that issue. I really thought I was done with that. How come it's come back again? It's because that energy is still existing in your luminous field. And so the shaman will track where or which chakra that energy is related to and help to clear that physically from your energetic field so that then you can establish a new normal and a new light and have room for that fresh energy to come in.
Right. And then how does that affect the physical body once you've done that?
Well, that's a really good question. So
because healing happens, so it's connected.
Right. Yeah. So I love that you asked that question, because actually in doing healing work, and I've often in recent years, I had become a little bit afraid to use the word healer only because it's often misunderstood. Healer being someone who heals you, as opposed to someone who holds sacred space for you to do your healing. And so I'm beginning again to try to own that word, because I do feel that I am a healer, and that holding that sacred space to allow people to heal is important. Sorry, and I lost your question though. You said...
Shell and I feel the same, that it's important for people to take on their own power in their own healing. So I love the way you said that. But I was getting to why or how, when you shift something in the energetic field, it relates and it helps.
How it affects the physical body.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So in a healing session, we might approach the beginning as a dialogue. At the beginning of the session, where we're discussing either a physical or an emotional ailment that we're focusing in on. So as we know, the mind and body are very connected. So the potential for a shift in the physical body of reduction of pain or change of the symptomology, it could happen, but shamanism is not, we don't say that healing is about the improvement of the physical body. Healing could also be a transition into the other world. Healing could also be the soul on its journey, having completed some piece that it needed to complete and then moving through. So we don't look at it in quite the same way. Healing is not about simply augmenting or improving the health of the body. Although certainly that may happen as a result of sessions. So it's really open. The soul is what's guiding us in that. And I actually, after doing healing work for so many years, I just fell in love with shamanism because it took away that heavy onus of being a practitioner where I was directing the choir as opposed to listening to the choir and helping it to sing.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That's so beautiful. And I also love how healing doesn't necessarily mean in shamanism fixing the physical body, but more preparing the soul to find its light and its love and its happiness and its journey, which is really special. Sarah, can you explain to us how traumas sometimes fragment the soul and how shamans help the soul come back to the person to heal through a soul retrieval?
Absolutely. Soul retrieval is one of the most wonderful journeys to guide people on. I honestly, it brings tears to my eyes when I think about the experiences I've had working with people doing soul retrieval. So if you can imagine at the time that you experienced a huge trauma, we all make a choice or a decision in the moment, whether it's conscious or unconscious. You might have been 6 at the time of this trauma. Who knows? Maybe you had a partner who left you. And somewhere in there, whether it was unconscious or conscious, you may have made a decision that was something to the effect of, I will never again be hurt in this way. And therefore, I will never, you know, let anyone in or, you know, whatever. So we make some conscious or unconscious choice or decision. And in that moment, the soul fragments. It's like you send that piece away. You lock it away somewhere. It's gone. And when you move forward, that agreement that you made might have in the moment enabled you to cope. Perhaps for a period of time, it was supportive. But in the long run, we want our soul to be whole and perfect and complete and accept ourselves as we are and bring in all that light to feel fullness, to feel the joy in our life. So the soul retrieval journey is basically a guided healing journey. I like to do using my Aboriginal hand drums that I make and a rattle, but it could be just voice. It's a deeply guided meditative healing journey in which you would enter the lower world or the place of your soul and meet with a power animal and meet with a protector to the lower world. And at that time, you basically are guided through a journey that will enable you to find your own answers for what was that piece that you lost and when did you lose it? When did that feeling of incompleteness arrive in your life? And then doing some healing work around it, recognizing what contracts you made with yourself or with the universe about how you were going to carry forward, and then inviting that piece home. And it's the most it's the most beautiful, light-filled, cherished experience to bring that soul piece home and to feel complete and whole.
Kind of, I remember doing soul retrievals with you, Sarah, and you know, Can you describe the chambers that the shaman takes you through to see what that contract may be and to see whether your soul is ready to be retrieved? Because, you know, we found in doing this work within our tribe that sometimes the soul is not ready to come back. Mm-hmm. And what the teaching is there.
Absolutely. So there are four chambers or caverns that we enter in a soul retrieval. The first one is the cavern of the incident. So we guide the person on their journey into that cave and allow them to wait for the information to come on what that incident is. So maybe they're met there by a guide or a spirit who is providing that information about what that original incident was when they gave up that piece of their soul. And when that's completed, we'll move into a second chamber, which is the chamber of the contract. And so being able to connect to that earlier or younger version of themselves, maybe when they were six, connecting to that younger self and asking about what was the contract that I actually made? What was that decision that I made consciously or unconsciously? And can you teach me more about that? It's often a big revelation for people that they don't even realize that feeling of incompleteness that they have had for years, or that law, I feel like I've lost a part of myself, I'll often hear people say. They don't realize until they hear about that contract how profound it is, and that they had a part to play in setting up that contract, and that they also can make a choice at this time to begin to heal that contract or rewrite it. Because as we know, we are all writing our own story in this life, and we have, as the authors of our story, we have the right and the responsibility to do our healing work and to bring that in. So the third chamber then is where all the excitement happens. You remember that one.
Wait, we're on second chamber.
Second chamber.
Question.
Of the contract, yep.
Yeah. So you're saying that we actually have a contract sometimes with someone that could hurt us. Is that what you're saying?
No, this is a contract with self.
Oh, with self,
this
to heal it.
This is a contract with self. So this is like a historical contract in this cavern. So, for example, if the incident had been, and before we came on the podcast, we were talking for a moment about this. For example, I was adopted. And so let's say that in my early experiences, and maybe we'll come back around to this because I don't know what questions you have for me, but in my early experiences before I connected with my forever family, I felt very alone. And so maybe in that very early stage, I made some decision about I have to take care of myself. No one else is going to take care of me. And I'll hold everyone at arm's length because it's not safe to bring people in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That essentially is a contract that I made before I was adopted in my first year.
And then you send that part of your soul called trust and belonging somewhere else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Belonging for sure. And so this cavern is more about getting information about what that contract was that you made. So it's like reading your own history book and saying, oh, really? I didn't even realize I had done that. I mean, obviously, if you're that young, it's a quite an unconscious thing. We can maybe relate to those a little more when we think about breakups that are adult years and say, oh yeah, remember when I said, no one will ever hurt me that way again. Therefore, I'm gonna put up this big wall.
But sometimes it's even stronger in these early years when it remains in the unconscious and you don't even realize that it's there until you do something like this.
Absolutely. And the soul retrieval can assist with this, once we've brought this piece back. And then also it brings us back to the other healing practice we were talking about, which actually I didn't mention, is called a chakra illumination, when we're looking at helping to clear an issue that keeps repeating itself in from our luminous field. And that imprint can be also from one of these early traumas. And therefore, you know, until we clear it, it keeps coming up. Yeah. So the two processes can work together in the right, you know, feeling for the right timing. Yeah. And then the third
chamber.
The third chamber is the chamber of the soul. So in that chamber, we meet that younger version of ourself. Or maybe the soul is going to appear, you know, to you as a light or a flame. Who knows? It's a very individual experience. So there's room for you to feel your way through that. And then asking that piece of the soul, are you ready to come home to me now?
So beautiful.
Yeah. And so, and you had asked Shell if the soul says I'm not ready, that's okay. We accept that. And we ask that piece of our soul, well, what conditions would you have me change? You know, what additional things do I need to add to my contract right now before you will come home to me? And usually the participant will very clearly know, well, I need to invite more self-love practices first, or I need to show my commitment to communicating more fully what I am feeling in this life, or whatever it is. And there's a condition. And so on a future journey, then we can revisit that, and that soul piece will come with open arms running. Right. Yeah.
It's kind of beautiful because you end up either retrieving that part of your soul and feeling more whole, or you get some pretty guided instructions of what that part of your soul is needing to want to come back into your life.
Absolutely. And I would say, you know, for the listeners too, that as you're listening to this, if you haven't had the experience of a soul retrieval journey, you might be listening and saying, well, I'm not really intuitive. I don't, you know, quote unquote, receive information, or I don't hear voices, or I don't, you know, I don't get images when I try to relax or meditate. And I would say I haven't had anyone yet on a soul retrieval journey who didn't go way down deep into the experience and didn't come, you know, came back up totally empty. I mean, everybody received what they needed. And yeah, it's just so stunningly beautiful. So you don't have to be an intuitive or a psychic in order to have a beautiful soul retrieval journey. Yeah.
What's it like after? I'm imagining, because I haven't done it, but Shelley has, and you've done it, obviously, Sarah. To me, it would almost be like forgiving yourself in some way, you know, like that relief that you get when you realize you've held back or kept a part of you separate in order to protect yourself, and then you've loved and forgiven that part. Mm-hmm. What's it like?
Shall you go ahead and explain that, because you had quite profound soul retrieval.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've had a soul retrieval in our tribe, and I've also done many on other people now. And for my experience, when I went down into that third chamber and I saw that part of my soul that I had sent away during traumas, it felt so profoundly beautiful to see that that part of my soul had not died, that it was just somewhere else in a different energetic realm, but that it was still very viable. I sensed it, I felt it, I recognized it as mine. And my first experience, that part of my soul was not ready to come back, which I had to accept. But the information I got at the time was the prescription of what would make that love come back to me. And it was a lot of forgiveness. I had built a wall around myself of resentment towards things that had happened in my life. And my soul said to me, you have to let that go. You have to be forgiving for me to want to come and reside with you. And so I went away and I had to face that. I had to face the fact that I was holding on to this negativity and these resentments, and I wasn't forgiving things that had happened in my life. And so on our next soul retrieval, it was amazing that that part of me came back. And in my experience, it just really, once the forgiveness of my soul came back, that allowed a lot more love and a lot more compassion and a lot more connection. And then, you know, which we're going to talk about next, you go into the fourth chamber, which is the chamber of the gift. Mm-hmm. And that gift for me was acceptance. So it is a profound experience. And maybe, Sarah, you could talk about the last chamber before the shaman guides you out of the lower world and back into Earth here.
Sure. And I just wanted to say, too, that in that chamber of the soul, the experience is going to be individual for everyone. So it depends on what that piece is that you lost. So it might be about forgiveness and self-forgiveness. It might be about embracing the whole. It might be about, you know, moving from a place of, in my own experience, was moving from a place of deep, deep loneliness to a feeling of wholeness. So in my own experience, it was like tears and I'm not alone. And my soul saying, you're never alone. You know, it's absolutely beautiful. So it's going to be individual for each person. Absolutely. And so I would encourage you all to have a soul retrieval journey. They're amazing. So the fourth chamber, the chamber of the gift, we go into the chamber and look around, and we find a gift waiting for us. So the gift could be, as Shelley was saying, for her, it was like a state. It was a state of being, a state of acceptance. It often presents itself as an item or an object. So I'll say that one of the soul retrievals I did that was the oddest thing, and you have to trust yourself, that what I received as a gift was toy tractor, like a little could be like a little boys or girls toy tractor they play around in the mud with. And so in my mind I thought, how is this a gift? What the heck is this? And so you take that gift and you put it in your pocket or your backpack, and you bring it back as you retrace your steps through the lower world, cleanse yourself in a beautiful river. I didn't talk very much about the work with your power animal and your spirit guide to the lower world, but they're there to protect you and guide you through that journey and be by your side. So thanking them and sort of finding out what you've received from them. So then often when it comes to the gift, we unpack that later after we've returned to our middle world, our middle earth, where we live. And unpacking that gift could be as simple as, you know, a page with a line down the middle, and one column is you and the other column is your gift, the tractor. And so the exercise went something like this: tractor, what are you here to show me? And the tractor saying, I'm here to remind you about play in your life. I'm here to remind you that it's important to build new roads and be creative and plow things over if they're not working. And, you know, and so that kind of, you know, dialogue with basically that part of my soul was being presented to me through the representation or the metaphor of the tractor. So I could have a little dialogue with myself on that and say, oh, right, yeah, I don't play enough. And I've sort of forgotten the joy of, you know, getting my hands in the mud and, like, you know, pushing, building sand castles and roads and new roads and bigger highways, right? Which is what we do when we build new neural pathways and we're open to new possibilities. So it's actually just beautiful.
Yeah, and also the strength of tractor at times.
Oh, yes.
Right? Like when you need to plow forward, that came up too.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So Sarah, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Would you share with us your experience with being there for your mom as she passed on.
Absolutely. So my mom had lived a good long life, was a very, very hardy person her whole life, but 2 days after we celebrated, and it's just the story as it is, 2 days after we celebrated her 90th birthday, and we thought she's gonna be kicking around for another 10 years at least, she was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, so a bone cancer above the right knee, it was a tough year. It was a tough journey. She basically, we had a tough time getting her admitted to hospital, even though that's what she needed. She was in quite a bit of pain. And so I was getting home care for her for, I don't know, about a month and lots of meds, and she became bedridden. So we didn't realize until later that she'd had a spontaneous fracture of the femur above the knee in two places. So she was living with a completely busted leg and trying to even shifting in her bed was terribly painful. So I will say then when we got her in hospital, she was about 6 months with three different surgeries to replace the knee. And had her body been capable of managing that infection, then the surgery would have been completely successful. As osteosarcoma actually can be if it hasn't spread anywhere. But her body never managed to manifest against the infection. And so she ended up succumbing at the end to a heart attack and heart failure. It was just too much on her body. What I will say though is I learned so much about both myself and her as a mentor and friend. I learned the power of holding. I mean, I always have said as a healer that it's important to hold space for people, but I had made a decision to close a busy clinical practice that I'd had for many years as we moved to a smaller community, and I built a bit of a healing space there. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to start teaching meditation, which, by the way, I meant to mention at the beginning with the bio, I'm also a certified meditation teacher through David G, and it's one of my other huge passions. So I was just ready to open up my clinic. I thought at my home clinic, and I thought, yeah, this is going to be all different. I'm going to be doing all the shamanic healing and the Reiki and the intuitive readings and move away from the physical stuff I'm doing. So I finished my job on Friday, and on Monday she was diagnosed. And I thought, universe, there are no mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm meant to be here. I'm meant to be prepared to have this time with her. And so it was about 7 months was the journey. I think I missed 5 days or 6 days of being with her every day. And it's, the journey as the caretaker, bless all of you who do that out there. It's a tough journey too, to keep, picking yourself up every day and doing the hospital laundry and the whole bit. My mom, bless her heart, was always a bright, bright spark. So when people would visit her, she was the one making them laugh. She was the one saying, well, look at me, I'm going to have a bionic leg. And now I'm, in between one of the surgeries, she was doing well for a week or so. And so she's traipsing around the hospital and, learning how to make her new knee work, which clicked backwards and forwards. So it was a bit awkward. But I've never seen anyone, work so hard at being bright. And at the end, I think we knew that something was up because she'd had a heart attack, and she made a point that she was getting another procedure to remove some fluid around the heart. And my, I stepped out of the room to go get some coffee or treats, I can't remember, for her. And she had a discussion with my husband that I didn't hear about until later. And she said, well, you know, I can't really go, you know, because my leg's not whole. And my husband very wisely said to her, well, you know, why would you say that, Marlene? You know, you're whole as you are. Even if your leg, isn't yours, you're whole. You can go anytime you want to. And she was like, oh, thank you. And, you know, he told me about that later and we both were like, oh, so, she'd had this procedure. They inserted a needle to remove some fluid around the heart. It was a very risky procedure. The doc said she was good. She'd be back up on the surgical floor the next day. And she said, I'm so tired. So tired. Is it okay if I have a little, you know, if I ask them for some more pain medication? And I said, yeah, if you're in pain, take that. And she took my hand and said, you've been a good daughter. And then I thought, that's a little odd. Like, yeah, Mom, we'll be back in an hour. We're just going to go have a little bite of dinner and come back. And when we came back, she had passed. I think she passed on that horrific time in the hospital was not her plan, but I think at the end of the day, she passed on her terms, you know. And I do believe that that piece of recognizing that she was whole was all she needed to give herself permission to heal. And for her, the healing was permission to move on to a place of joy. And I am highly intuitive, so she visits me and I'm aware of her. And sometimes we have a good old laugh and conversation because I used to say to her, well, Mom, one day when you go, you know, we're really not going to be parted. We're still going to have long conversations because I can hear you. And she would say, ha, ha, ha. I don't really believe in all that stuff. I don't really think so. But okay, whatever, if that makes you feel better, daughter. And now we're like, uh-huh, ha, ha, ha. Hi, Mom. Actually, I reached out to a friend last month. I was struggling a little bit with some depression. It was an anniversary of the passing of my mom. She passed on solstice 2 years ago. And I had contacted one of my friends and said I was really missing my mom and it was really hard for me. And so she wrote back, oh, you know, your mom's with you. She's really thinking about you. She said, and I don't know why, but every time I think about your mom, and she didn't know my mom, she'd say, I hear the words over and out. And which was a big joke between my husband and my mom and I. And that was, you know, she loved to tell stories. And so, you know, I call her on the way home from work from Oakville to Orangeville, you know, an hour and a bit or more. She'd talk the whole way and I keep saying, okay, Mom, I got to go. The traffic's getting bad. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then she'd go on to another story and, you know, we just couldn't stop talking. And then finally, it's like, okay, I really, really have to go. Okay, over and out. It's not something that anyone else would have known, you know, and I thought that's so perfect.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so you know for sure. Yeah. I've told both my parents that when they pass, I want to hear from them and know
yes
that they're there. And I've always believed that we're more than flesh and blood and that we carry on and come back. But just to have that connection after they leave mm-hmm. is so incredible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're living on a plane that is subject to our perception based on our five senses. And so, you know, development of that intuition or that sixth sense can help us make sense of the world sometimes. But that aspect of physical missing someone in their physical body and that loss, that takes a lot to heal from. Yeah.
Yeah, we just can't see them anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is hard and we can't connect the same.
Mm-hmm. And we miss our hugs.
Right? Yeah.
Sarah, as a profound shaman and healer, journeying with your mom, you know, to that degree, how would you approach a terminal diagnosis if it were you? Did it shed any light on that?
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, going on that journey with her and even knowing what I knew about shamanism, I asked Spirit, would she be open to my doing healing work with her, you know, a shamanic healing work? And the answer I got was, no, this is her time. Don't interfere. She's doing what her soul is guiding this journey, and she's doing what she needs to do. So I felt non-interference on my part with that. But in terms of myself and a terminal diagnosis, yeah, I really connect to the teachings of Ram Dass. Do you know Ram Dass?
No,
oh, gosh. Okay. So Ram Dass is, everybody's got to get to know Ram Dass. It's amazing. He just passed last year, I think in his 90th year. He is one of the first Westerners. He was a professor, university professor in the social sciences. He went to India after he and his buddy Timothy Leary had been experimenting with psilocybin to open up their perception of the world. And he realized that, well, every time you go up, you come back down. So he went to India to find a guru. And was going everywhere, and then ended up sort of finding his guru Maharaji named Karoli Baba, and was, you know, was totally not buying it, not in, and this guy just brought him to a place of pure love. So he came back in the 70s. He did a lot of teachings. You can find them online through the Love Serve Remember Foundation, with his early talks, and he's got scouts of books. Anyways, in recent years, he had written books on aging, death, and dying, and he talks about his many, many years of experiences sitting with people as they pass through to the other realm. And his perception was that you needed to see the person as spirit. So not be, you know, I'm holding my mom's hand. Well, I wasn't there, but I'm holding her hand, and not me on how much I'm going to miss her, or on my pain, or on her loss of life, or the tragedy of it, but that I'm holding her hand, and I'm focusing on connecting my soul to her soul. And her soul is not broken. Her soul is complete and whole and perfect and guiding the whole thing, you know. So I always remember that, the tremendous guidance of Ram Dass. And then I'm thinking that book was about 3 years ago. It's called Walking Each Other Home. It's quite
good. Walking Each Other Home.
Yeah. And the idea that, you know, whether we're dealing with a diagnosis or illness or terminal illness or not, we are all walking each other home. We're all returning back to source, back to light, back to consciousness, where we are all connected in love. And that's the highest power that there is.
Wow, that is so profoundly beautiful to consider it that way, and to see it as something like a sacred journey of walking home rather than a loss of.
Would you find that healing as well? Like, just to do that would raise your vibration, because you're in a vibration of love. So the outcome could be almost anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you'll hear Alberto Viola talk about shamanism and that view of healing not being the same, in the sense that maybe our healing is that transition into the ether, into the wider realm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from that perspective, there's so much more that you know, a spirit or a guide could do. A lot of them are there, you know, kind of here helping us out as guides, you know, continuing to live vicariously, as, you know, my mom always says, when you're ready to write that book, I'm here. Let's get down to it, because she was writing in her later years. And so, you know, there's so much more than we see and perceive from this perspective. And there's so much more light that we have access to, that we will have access to. It's almost like that, what's that statement? We are not, we're not bodies here having a spiritual experience. We're actually spirits here having a human experience. Yeah. So we came from spirit, we're returning to spirit.
Yeah. Well, even what we see as, I mean, we perceive all these things as negative and we approach them with fear, when after we walk through it, it could be a huge growing experience and there could be huge growth. And even letting go of the fear of death for anyone, even if you're 10 years, 20, 90, is hugely liberating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because our fear of death will often stop us from stepping forward in ways that we might otherwise not.
So true. Our fear of death often stops us from living fully as we are.
Embracing and accepting, you know, and I often say that in this society, we will, because we've, you know, we've come from spirit, we've individuated into these individual bodies, and so we perceive ourselves as a me or an I. And so in doing so, how do I make me stronger? Well, if I'm a loving person, I will do it by connecting to a tribe and saying, this is who we are. We're doing these kinds of things, and we're trying to help lift the vibration of the planet, which, by the way, I'm very thankful to both of you for doing that and inviting me into this tribe today. You know, sometimes we see it in other places in the world where people are doing that through defining themselves against other people. So that's where we see these terrible things of, you know, racism and injustice and so on. So I lost my point where I started. No.
Well, just how it can lead to something bigger or something greater. Bigger. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have.
And it is, you know, the way I was feeling it when you were describing it, Sarah, is we're all going to die, which also is such a connection for all of us. You know, this journey that we're all going to face at some point, you know, it kind of binds us together. You know, we're in this boat together, and how you shared it really made me feel almost excited for the journey instead of being afraid of the journey.
Absolutely. And so I didn't fully answer your question directly. I'm realizing that now about my own impression of a terminal diagnosis. And when you just said excited, I would say that's interesting because for myself, because I have suffered on and off throughout my life with depression and sometimes anxiety, that sometimes I would, if I was really, really in a low place, I would say, well, dying, I'm not afraid of dying. Dying's not the hard part. It's the living that's hard. You know, that's often how I felt when I'm in the, you know, the midst of that low spot. And I just think, oh, wow, you know, but it could be partly due to the fact that there are some people who definitely see and sense a lot more than I do, but my intuition, I've worked on opening up my intuition over the years, so I do see and sense and hear, and just am aware that there's something greater than me, that there is a level of spirit side that we return to, and I can sense and feel that light when I meditate daily. Sometimes, and some days it's like, it's only been 2 more minutes. Oh, it's only been 2 more minutes. But I have more and more, many, many days where I just get lost in some beautiful zone. And it's like, connected to spirit, to just being, to being still, to being one, to being part of the universe. And it is beautiful. And you're right, we are all returning there. So what's there to be afraid of? It's just because we don't know it. Because it feels like the unknown, that it brings fear. We have no reason to fear it.
I loved how you talked about being with someone in spirit. Because I think we're so afraid because we have to do it alone. We come in alone. We leave alone. So for someone to be able to connect with you at that point in spirit would be really comforting.
It is the most beautiful thing. And I had my mom was very clear. She made that decision to pass when we left. I know she did. She was trying to save me from a trauma. My dad had passed a few years prior to that, and he was very fearful of dying. And so he hung on and hung on and hung on. And it was interesting. I was just holding space for him, and I was okay with holding space for his spirit. But the day that we really thought, well, he's going to go, it's just a matter of hours, but he was just hanging on. And so finally I let go of his hand, and I went and I sat down, and I held my hands over my heart, and I visualized his spirit, his soul, and holding love and him connected in love. And I said, angels, he's suffering and he doesn't need to be afraid anymore. It's time. Please take him. He was gone in 2 minutes.
Wow.
It was wild. And I don't think that was my intention, but somehow my focusing on his soul and that light, I believe, enabled the energy to open up. So I do believe that our holding space for someone in that situation is tremendously powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are in spirit. I mean, we're in spirit here together in our bodies, but we're also connected in spirit to the entire universe, all the beauty that's out there and all that great unknown.
Right? And in this lifetime or in the human body, to come back to that knowledge and realize that you are part of whole and something much greater is really empowering.
It's very empowering. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you
for joining us.
What beautiful wisdom and joy you brought to all of us. Thank you.
It was my absolute pleasure.
Sarah, before we leave, can you just tell us how our viewers and our listeners could get in touch with you if they so desired?
Absolutely. The first I would say is I do have a website up. It's sarahannritchie.com. That's Sarah with an H, and without an E, Richie with a T. sarahannritchie.com. I'm afraid I'm not so great at all the media stuff, so I haven't updated some of the info on there, but they could definitely send me an email through that. I'm also on social media, Instagram and Facebook, the same, Sarah Ann Richie. And if they are interested in meditating with me, I'm on Insight Timer under Sarah Ann Richie, and I would love to have them join on with any of those, and they could connect me with me if they are interested in any healing sessions as well or any coaching. Yeah.
How beautiful. And we're going to have a landing page where people can chat with Shell and I. And so if anyone, you know, loses that information or needs it again, we'll be able to give it there. Very good.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.